Jungle bass, doom, boom, house music. Jungle bass, house music. Welcome to Men's Chunk. Are we actually keeping that?
I think we have to keep that. It's a little trip down memory lane for me, circa 2000.
You get a nice contact high.
Yep, totally.
Welcome to Men's Junk, discussing fringe male topics seldom talked about for the betterment of everyone. I'm Sebastian Ankiel, and I'm with...
Matthew Beasley. Hi, everyone.
Welcome. Today, we are going to discuss a controversial topic. Well, okay, wow, I just totally led into that the wrong way.
However, way to set it up.
After last episode, I was talking to Matthew about potential future episodes, and obviously Matthew is a therapist. Is that the right word?
Yes.
Yes.
Therapist, so, counselor.
Yeah, I didn't want to insult your religion, your institution of people. And we were talking about different topics, and you suggested talking about marijuana, aka weed. And I was kind of shocked because my understanding of weed is that everyone that has weed is happy with their lives and stoked on everything. And you informed me that it was actually one of the most abused drugs of choice.
Right, which is something that when I started my journey as an addictions therapist was kind of news to me as well. That wasn't one of the substances that I abused during my active addiction days.
Okay,
and
okay.
So I kind of assumed, I'm like, oh, it's just marijuana. Like, not that many people struggle with it. And so I was quite shocked when I saw how many people were struggling with it.
So, and you deal with that, on a weekly basis?
More than weekly, for sure. A huge portion of my clients struggle with their marijuana use to varying degrees. Having said that, I know we wanted to throw in this caveat right near the beginning. This isn't us suggesting that all
weed is bad. Weed is bad.
No, we're not suggesting at all that it's always problematic or even that it's problematic in a majority of cases. It's just that my sense is that there's a discrepancy between how big of a problem it can be for some people versus what people's perceptions are.
Interesting. So in terms of, there's actually a term for, what do they call it? Marijuana syndrome, right? Syndrome is the word? There's a term for when it's a problematic, right?
Well, yes. A marijuana use disorder would be
The
fancy pants DSM language.
Oh, okay. Very cool. So, okay. We're not being judgmental. I know people like their weed. I actually mentioned to one of my clients, I'm going to have a little fun with this, and he likes his weed a lot, and he took this very personally that we were doing this episode.
Oh, jeez.
So our disclaimer, if you are listening, Mr. E, it's for you. Don't judge us, okay? We're just trying to provide information, okay?
Absolutely.
We're trying to be friendly.
And the reason why, in my experience, that this is suitable for a men's podcast is just in terms of the different use rates between men and women. Like all substances, marijuana is used more frequently and more heavily on average by men than women. So it is something that disproportionately
impacts men. That's really interesting because I'm not going to get into all the studies now, but there is one thing that I thought was interesting and caught my eye was that they said that women had a higher chance of actually becoming addicted if they get started.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So, throw it out there. So one thing I wanted to introduce, though, is you gave me this concept, which I thought was really cool, because I think the two biggest mental health issues right now are depression and anxiety.
Yes. And two most common by far. Yep.
And you told me that was what was really common is that if you had anxiety, you wanted a bit of a downer.
Yes. Yep.
Right? This framework where if you have anxiety, you're not going to go and start doing lines off a desk to make yourself feel better because you're going to feel a lot worse.
Right. Yeah. It's going to amp up your anxiety massively.
Yes. And so when it comes to Depression, people take more uppers. Would you say that's fairly accurate?
For sure. That there does seem to be a correlation. Depression, you take stimulants like cocaine or crystal meth. And anxiety, you take things that are more downers like mm-hmm. alcohol and pot.
So I guess that's where the segue is that we wanted to talk about weed and anxiety. So there seems to be conflicting reports. We're going to get into the more social implications later on. Yeah. But even like the fact that we sit here and have to make a disclaimer because we think that people are going to get pissed off at us, I think kind of indicates that there's a perceptual, I guess, issue is the right word.
Yeah.
A perception or at least a lack of respect toward weed in general.
Yeah, and I, to be honest, I at least partially blame some of the older anti-drug campaigns. I feel like they leaned way too hard into like the whole reefer madness, fear-mongering around marijuana mm-hmm. that it actually caused this reverse effect where people are now like tuned out to like, oh, please, like don't tell me about negative consequences of weed. We've heard the propaganda, Nancy Reagan. Like we don't need to
It's also interesting, though, that if we're going to talk about that, we also have to talk about the fact that weed has actually become generally roughly, you know, they've actually taken samples in the U.S. So when they confiscate drugs in the U.S., they've taken samples and measured the THC content, and they found that it's 3 times stronger
than a couple decades ago.
Yeah. So the concept that, like, those administrations were overhyping it in a way is accurate because the weed just wasn't as strong as it is today.
Oh, totally. Like the weed that was being smoked in like the heyday of the hippie era in the 1960s and 70s, way milder than it was around the turn of the century, which in turn, again, is way milder than it is 20 yeah. years later.
Do you have any personal experiences with weed?
Why, yes, Seb. So well, it's funny that before this episode, you know, we were both talking about how for neither one of us was weed the main substance that okay. we went to. So as I've shared on this podcast mm-hmm. before, I was in active addiction. And weed was never one of the substances that I was really drawn to. But having said that, if it was around, like my friends were using it, like absolutely I would still smoke it. Mm-hmm. I just wouldn't seek it out for that reason that you mentioned before, that I was more struggling with depression, and so I wanted uppers, not so
okay,
much weed.
That makes sense.
Weed was more like, okay, end of the night, I'm trying to fall asleep, and so we'd have a joint at the end of the night kind of thing. But it wasn't the go-to.
So I wanted to play a little bit of a game with you here.
Sure.
Because you are in the field, and I'm sure you get these kind of questions and perceptions all the time. Isn't weed just a good thing to take for anxiety?
It depends. And you might hear me say that a lot this episode.
Why does it depend? Why?
Well, it depends, first off, which cannabis product we're talking about. Are we okay. talking about something that has more CBD or something that has more THC?
Okay.
It also depends on how frequently you're using it and if mm-hmm. you're using other tools to manage your anxiety as well.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, are you building up a tolerance and
that makes sense.
Therefore having rebound anxiety whenever you're sober? Or is it more like occasionally for severe anxiety, but most of the time you're coping through other behavioral or cognitive strategies?
Yeah, because what I read basically from the little research that I did was that especially people that suffered from social anxiety had a really hard time. Like, also would lean on weed a lot more.
Yeah.
Because it would allow them to enter. And I've actually, I mean, I know these people myself.
Yeah.
They literally feel like they have a difficult time even entering social situations without weed.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. What you see with alcohol as well. The, you know, the whole idea that like I need to be a little bit buzzed before I can go to the party or meet new people.
So is it, I mean, we mentioned earlier on, we were talking about this. I mean, is it a trap?
Can it
be a trap?
It certainly can be a trap. Again, like I said, it depends on how frequently you're using it and whether you're mixing it with other strategies. But the problem is that if you use weed on a consistent basis, and by consistent basis, it doesn't have to be daily. It could be weekly or multiple really? Times okay. a week, that you can pretty quickly start to build up a tolerance mm-hmm. towards it, where you're just needing more and more weed to get the same effect. It depends on how much you want me to go into the neuroscience of it.
I don't think you have to really go into that portion. There's a lot of studies that show that it doesn't take long to build up a tolerance.
Correct.
So, yeah. like, if you went into it, I think you don't have to go into the deep, deep dive with that stuff. I guess where I'm a little bit – because here's actually something that you'll have a little bit of perspective on is – so there's a risk factor there.
Yeah.
Now, are there other ways to deal with anxiety that hypothetically could be better, more accessible? Like, is that feasible? I mean, I don't actually have anxiety myself. I know people who have anxiety, and I know some of them who smoke weed and they love it. You know, how do you even approach having a conversation? Like, I would never tell someone what to do. That's just not what I do. Like, I'm not that person.
No, neither would I, even in the context of therapy. It would be more about analyzing the pros and cons of their use.
So how would someone know that they have a problem?
I typically look at a couple different questions when asking the person for themselves if they define themselves as having a problem or not. The first is around the negative impacts. What kind of negative impacts are you noticing from your weed use? And that's kind of the sneaky part about weed, because with other drugs and alcohol, sometimes those negative impacts are painfully obvious. Whereas for weed, and like excuse the pun, it's more of like a slow burn.
Okay.
It's more in
that makes sense.
Yeah. It's more like the feeling of kind of drifting through life or kind of lack of motivation. The weed starts to crowd out other activities. You're doing other activities less. But it's not like, oh, I got fired from my job or my partner broke up with me or I have all of these health issues, that the negative consequences don't kind of scream at you as loudly on average.
So it's a slow burn. And there is some studies to actually back up why I think people feel it's safe. Mm. Basically, if you take a lower dose, you can actually lower your anxiety effectively.
Yep.
However, as you go higher doses and more frequently, they actually find over time that when you're not taking the weed, your anxiety is through the roof.
Totally, because
it's the general like gist of a lot of the studies I've looked at.
Yeah, because your brain's natural neurochemicals, like serotonin, like dopamine, they start to do what's called downregulation. Yep. Your brain starts to produce less of those chemicals naturally because it's now relying on the weed.
That makes sense.
Your brain's going like, why do I need to produce my own shit when he's just gonna, you know, smoke a bowl and give me the easy stuff.
It's kind of like doing steroids where your balls shrink.
Right, yes.
I got some raisins.
Yes. Yeah, so and so what happens over time is that...
I told you I would do this.
Yeah.
Love you, Matthew.
I love you, too. is that your brain starts to depend on weed to cope with anxiety and take away the weed, and all of a sudden anxiety just rebounds even more strongly than it was before.
Okay, that makes perfect sense to me.
It's like a yo-yo effect.
Jeez. And then obviously like if someone's actually, I guess we're going to end up talking about these two things like part and parcel a little bit. It's been pretty well documented that weed can be addictive.
Yeah, though even that statement that you've said right there, like that's probably going to get you in some
canceled,
some hot water. Because
GTFO,
again, there's
get out of here.
There's this kind of like pretty prevalent myth that weed is somehow different from other drugs because it's, you know, I'm using my quotey fingers here, it's natural. Whereas, you know, just because something is natural doesn't mean that it can't be habit forming. That it does fall under the same categories of being able to develop tolerance and withdrawal, which are typically what we're looking at when we're looking at addiction potential.
Interesting. Oh, so that's actually – so that clarifies something for me. So tolerance and withdrawal. So is that – last time we talked about NOFAP. Mm-hmm. And is that kind of the barrier when we talk about NOFAP in terms of pornography, whether it's addictive or not?
Yeah. That's
tolerance and withdrawal.
Yeah, that's a part where there's still a bit of a question mark as to how much tolerance and withdrawal there are. Mm-hmm. That different researchers kind of claim different things when it comes to that. Whereas with substances like weed, alcohol, coke, et cetera, that's not controversial. They just do create tolerance and withdrawal over time.
That's so interesting. Yeah, because I guess the biggest difference, like I said, that there was a point where it was a lot less strong than it is now.
Yes. And so that's part of it. Yep.
You know, as you increase the dosages, you are increasing the risk factors.
Yep.
The other thing I think, actually, one thing I want to say, like, just outwardly, is after doing the research and looking at the facts, I think that this is what's going to definitely get me canceled, okay? the very laissez-faire approach to weed as a drug, as something that you can ingest, thinking that it's harmless, can be really problematic for youth.
Yeah.
And that's actually been shown in a lot of studies.
Yeah. Later on in this episode, we'll get into more around psychosis. But yeah, for teenage developing brains, it's tremendously risky for developing psychotic disorders or mood disorders, like early introduction of weed for sure.
Yeah.
And again, that's not to say that every teenager who smokes up is going to become schizophrenic. Like, of course not. But that you are increasing your risk factors for that for sure.
So in a way, would you agree with me that, at least in my eyes, I mean, I come from I'm a personal trainer, like I'm health and wellness coach. I would basically advocate, like, if I was to, you know, just look at it, the way I would look at it, you know, one time, like once in a while use, you know, recreational use, pretty okay, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, but once you're starting to notice more patterned behavior or more ritualistic behavior around it, like you're needing it every night to go to sleep, or you're taking it every day after work, or anytime you go to a party, or you know what I mean? Like once it's starting to get patterned.
That makes sense. Because then you're just getting in.
Yeah. Then you're getting in the territory of building up tolerance. And
that's what's problematic and dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's not that, like we were talking about this just earlier. I mean, it's a slow burn.
Yes.
So you don't really when do people here's a question, because I mean you have very good experience with this. When is generally the moment, like people don't wake up and have a problem. Like you don't just like take weed for you don't smoke a joint 5 days in a row and then you're like, oh my God, I have a problem.
Right, no, not at all.
So I mean, how does that kind of manifest? I don't know if you can like share that.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I see it with my clients or, you know, with other people in the recovery community where, you know, weed was, you know, one of the main substances they used, it's more like kind of having this epiphany. Oftentimes it's kind of like mid to late 20s or maybe early 30s of kind of like, what have I done over the past 5 years? What, like, have I been, if I know it's a stereotype, but I been kind of sitting on the couch for the past 5 years?
Eating nachos.
Yeah, not progressing with relationship or health or work or school goals.
Okay.
Have I, you know, dropped out of university or dropped out of the dating world and kind of retreated into kind of like almost like a monogamous relationship with weed.
Wow. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's more the realization of kind of like the what am I doing with my life kind of realization.
So there's – it was so interesting. I'm drawing parallels to the NoFap conversation a little bit. Because I guess from, like, once again, health and wellness standpoint, anytime we ingest something that's mind-altering – I think it has to be respected. It has to be treated like medicine.
Yeah.
And I know some people call them drugs. I usually like these things have, you know, a therapeutic a benefit. Like it's shown that you can have a therapeutic benefit.
Like for example, I hope it's okay if I share this. We can edit it out if it's not, I suppose.
No, it's cool.
Before the episode, you shared that a family member of yours who has struggled with chronic arthritis took CBD and it was like, oh wow, like all of a sudden I can move my hands. And absolutely, for people with MS or people with other pain issues, CBD in particular, which is one of the chemicals found in weed, can be tremendously beneficial. And it doesn't have the same kind of psychoactive component that THC has.
Mm-hmm.
However, when it's interesting, some of the research I was doing, when it comes to the products that Canadians are buying, They are still leaning way more heavily on the THC products as opposed to the CBD products. It's like they're wanting the high as well. They're
okay, so I want. Oh goodness, I'm gonna go down this road. Why? Okay, so is it? Does it just seem it's a little bit serendipitous to you and me? I guess that the world is kind of crazy, and Canada's like, we're gonna legalize weed. It just feels like. We're just going to give you these coping mechanisms to numb feelings. I know this is a bit of a curveball because these are things that I think about.
Right.
Because when we're numbing feelings, we're not acting on them.
Right.
When we have an anxious world, when we have a challenging world, you know, I feel like sometimes solutions are just given a little bit too easily by governing bodies to negate some of the effects of you know sadness or anxiety or whatever it is because
right.
if
like,
people
here's
actually
a substance. Yeah.
yeah here take this and you'll feel better yeah. Instead of actually dealing with the core sources of the problem if you have a highly medicated population then this is actually better for the powers that be quote unquote
right because it's at least keeping people soothed enough.
Sedated.
I see where you're
That's
going
my standpoint,
that. Yeah.
right? Because like I think like if you feel a certain way, you should express that in some way, shape, or form. Now obviously like there's different levels of function and dysfunction, right?
Absolutely. And I mean when it comes to the debate around legalizing weed in Canada, it got legalized in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to take people at their word that the main motivation was getting profits out of the hands of drug dealers.
Okay, cool.
Actually making it somewhat more difficult for adolescents to get a hold of it because now it's being sold through legal stores where they check ID, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Somewhat more like I know you can obviously still get it, but a little bit more difficult for teens to get
we
access.
We didn't win the war on drugs.
No. That's an unwinnable war. That's a whole other podcast. Like that's not helpful.
wow, you just like yeah, no. you cut that like.
Yeah.
Holy,
so
okay.
I see what you're saying.
Matthew has spoken.
Yeah, that's
we have lost the war on drugs. Let's move on.
Yeah, we have. That
like firsthand. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I do see what you're saying, that it can feel like an easier solution just to be like, okay, fine, let's just legalize it. But I do think that there are net positives to legalization.
Okay, cool.
However, I do think we still need to do better as a culture to deal with that more preventative medicine that you're talking about. Like, hey, how can we create a society with less anxiety
that's,
and depression
that's kind
to
of
begin
my
with
process, yeah.
so that people don't feel the need to reach out to weed and alcohol so much?
Yeah, which goes into social media, which goes into connection, which goes – there's just so many levels to that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's very cool. So – let's see. So,
ooh, can I circle back? Because, sorry, before it leaves my brain, you initially asked at the start of this section, is there other stuff that can help treat anxiety other than weed that is, I forget how you phrased it, but something like less habit forming?
Yeah. What are the alternatives? Like, say I'm listening to this, like, I'm always trying to relate to somebody who's sitting there, you know, maybe in their car, they're sitting in their bed, they're listening to a podcast. I mean, obviously. Like I said, we're not going to sit here and patronize you and tell you, oh, you've been bad. But, you know, what are the options? Like, how does someone – if you do see there's a problem, if you do see you're not moving forward, I mean, how do you even begin from that position?
Right. And, of course, as a therapist, I'm going to shill for therapy, especially CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, or acceptance and commitment therapy are tons of research backing their efficacy for helping with anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the basics of, you know, trying to regulate your sleep and exercise and watching your caffeine use and that kind of stuff can help as well. And then social connection you touched on as well is massive for aiding anxiety. And I know that can be like a chicken and the egg thing. It's like, well, I feel so anxious, I don't want to go out and socialize. And it's kind of like when it comes down to it with any form of anxiety disorder, ultimately it's like leaning into the thing that makes you anxious is the only way to solve the anxiety.
Oh, so you're a proponent of exposure therapy.
To, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Very close to me had anxiety, and I watched them progress, and it sounded like exposure therapy was, it almost felt like pulling teeth. Like, it was hard work at points.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's normal to, like, well, that causes me anxiety. That causes me emotional pain. Of course I don't want to lean into that. That sounds like
It's a tough sell, though, in a way. I mean,
it is.
Like,
whereas
you can smoke a weed.
Yeah, take a substance sounds like a very easy sell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what do you say to that? I mean, what is your thought process? I mean, how do you even broach that? Like, if somebody's sitting there saying, I'm going to have my weed and I don't want to do any of this stuff, like, that sounds hard.
Well, first off, empathizing with the fact that it is hard. You're absolutely right that when it comes to battling anxiety and depression, that there's no quick fix or easy solution. Mm-hmm. And it does involve hard work to get there. But kind of balancing off short-term you versus long-term you. Short-term you, smoke weed, take a drink, take another drug, you'll feel better. Long-term you, that's going to make anxiety worse. Avoiding the things that make you anxious are going to make you feel worse.
Okay, so the upside is long-term.
Yes, which again,
freedom.
I know is a tough sell because we tend to be programmed to look for the short-term.
Yeah, one of the things I also found was really interesting, and I think also plays into why there's a lack of respect, is that there's such large gaps in individual differences in how people respond.
Yeah.
There was even a study I found where even little tiny gene variations would literally change how people would respond to weed. And I thought that was – it's kind of wild, right, when you think about it. Like, one person could sit there and say, I don't have an issue with this. Like, this is totally fine. Like, I feel great.
Yeah.
Whereas another person could sit there and it could be crippling.
Yeah. 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 And it's one of those things that you don't necessarily know until you start doing it kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
That now you can look at stuff like family history. You can look at your relationship with other behaviors and substances and draw some parallels that way. That'll give you some signposts.
Of like what's going on.
Right. But still, to some extent, like there is that roll of the dice of like, hey, maybe this will be totally fine or maybe this will be a shit show.
Ooh. Yeah, that's... That seems very – see, it's interesting, right? Because my perspective is so, like, health and wellness-oriented. But I know a lot of people are just like, it's fine.
Right, yeah.
You know, like, there's this, like, lighthearted way of looking at it that I think I don't really – I've always been really, like, wary of, like, mind-altering substances.
Right.
I respect them a lot. But, yeah, that's a really – so, I mean – I guess if you were to tell them one place to start, like it would be basically, where would be the first place? Like if you were having someone's having a weed issue and they're like, where would you even, like if they don't have access to therapy? I'm thinking about people who have very low income.
Right. Yeah. Which that
like,
is
what do
a
you
huge
do then?
Barrier.
Like what do you? How do you even? Where do you even start? I mean, now that actually I just realized, you told me. I was actually shocked when you said this. You don't realize this, but you said something earlier, and I caught it, and I've logged it in my brain, and I'm going to repeat it right now because it's freaking shocking to me. You're telling me that in group, like AA groups, people come to – or NA groups, people come with weed issues?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's like a respected thing because I have flashbacks to that scene in that movie with Bob Saget.
Which one? I'm trying to remember which.
So there's a movie. I don't remember the exact movie. Someone goes into a like an NA or AA group. And he goes, oh, he had an issue with marijuana. And Bob Saget stands up. And he's like, do you ever suck dick for marijuana? And like just basically makes it out to be like this very minimalist thing.
So that's a fair point.
So it's terrifying. Like, can you imagine like you have this public discourse where somebody is vocalizing their difficulty with something and another group of people say or publicly it's been basically made into this is nothing, like this is not even a problem.
And to be honest with you, I kind of was one of those people who had a little bit of a judgy attitude.
Oh, cool.
Because, again, because weed wasn't a problem for me, I was kind of like, really? He's in the treatment center for weed? Like,
really?
Get a real addiction, man. Like,
Oh, my God.
I was one of those judgy people. And then, like I said, as I found out more and more,
taken a long journey to get
here. Yeah, yeah. That I was like, oh, okay. Like, weed actually is quite common to struggle with. And yes, there will be people sitting in there in Narcotics Anonymous with marijuana being the primary issue. And you will occasionally hear people with their kind of like, you know, kind of machismo going like, I had the $2,000 a day crack habit. And who are you here with your like little, you know, Nancy weed habit? Kind of like occasionally you'll hear some nonsense like that. But overall, like I'd say it nowadays, it's respected that, you know, because it's so damn common, that it's respected that, you know, weed can be a thing. And there is a marijuana anonymous program as well for specifically people who struggle with
actually
weed. Yeah, that's a thing. Oh yeah, and it's quite, especially in Vancouver, it's quite common.
There's people in Vancouver that smoke weed.
Yeah, which is maybe something that is useful for listeners to know. Like here in BC, we have the highest pot use of any province in Canada.
Really?
More people.
More,
yeah.
Well, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, is it chalky?
Really? We also have the best weed, apparently, too.
Yeah, yeah.
We have some of the best weed in the world.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, good thing they legalized it, man, so we can get those go profits.
If you're listening to this and you have a side business, you're welcome. Wow. All right, cool.
I got a little dark. Okay.
There's our sponsor, Canna something.
Yeah, big Canna.
I'm not going to name any businesses.
Yeah, totally. I don't want to get in any trouble.
Weed Mart. Wait, maybe that's the actual name of a thing. No.
Okay, it probably is. It probably is.
Wow, we're in trouble.
Well, okay, this is maybe jumping ahead when we talk more about the cultural stuff.
Yeah, I was going to have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, because I
wanted to play with that a lot.
I have a client who prior to legalization in Canada, was one of the activists fighting for legalization. And his perspective is super interesting that since legalization, and like we probably could have predicted this before the fact, but cannabis has now become big business, like big tobacco, like big alcohol, big oil, like all the bigs. Just how much that's impacted kind of weed using culture, because it used to be considered kind of like this kind of underground kind of like anti-establishment substance to do.
Oh.
But now it's like so mainstream. It's almost like bougie. Like, you know, in Yale Town, you've got all your...
You think it's going to lose some of that old rep?
I think it already has. I think it's now become more like this middle class thing as opposed to a anti-establishment thing. I think
it's become cool. It's become the
cool in the mainstream version of cool as opposed to hipster cool.
It's the Marlboro.
Yes.
Of our time.
Yes, yeah.
Like you go, you walk onto the beach, you got your joint.
Yep, yeah.
You're Johnny Cool.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I got my joint. Fuck yeah. I'm a badass. Do you want to smoke a joint with me, Matthew? We go to the beach, we smoke a joint. It's gonna be
cool. Nancy Reagan says just say no.
Nancy Reagan. No, but I totally get that vibe. There's like totally that vibe.
Yeah, that it has become a lot more corporate, which like, hey, you... That's the way things
so
tend
funny.
To go.
I remember one time I was working at a venue as a bouncer. And one of the artists, this actually would totally fit in from a societal discussion. Obviously, you can't smoke weed inside a venue. But this artist was, you know, they obviously paid this person a large sum of money, all those different things. And they said, yeah, he's going to smoke up. And you're just going to not do anything. And so, of course, I could imagine, you know, being a fan of said artist, you see this artist, he's smoking his weed, now it's cool, right?
Right. Which it's interesting that we've had this journey with tobacco and alcohol where, you know, we no longer have the same tobacco commercials that we used to have. You don't see movie stars, you know, smoking on set or smoking in the film nearly as much anymore, unless it's like a period piece kind of going back to the 50s or 60s or something. That we've had this kind of journey in terms of representation, and I just wonder what's going to happen with weed now that it's legal in Canada and multiple U.S. states as well. What's that journey going to look like? Are we going to just be seeing more and more of it on set, or is it going to follow the same trajectory of like, yes, it's legal, but we don't want to actively encourage use or overly normalize it, if that makes sense?
Yeah. So one of the things actually I've been following a little bit is there's certain fads that occur in certain generations.
Yeah.
There's a certain level of, especially our generation, of nostalgia. There's like this this underground, especially even older generations, this concept. However, at some point, that's going to fade because our generation is going to get older. We're not going to be smoking as much.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have this new generation that didn't grow up with that at all. And I wonder what that's going to look like. It could even take a certain, I guess, similar trajectory to smoking, like actual smoking, like tobacco.
Could too, yeah. Way down.
But that being said, I mean, there are a lot of different delivery systems of weed. I mean, I guess the healthiest is a vaporizer, from my understanding.
It's certainly healthier than smoking.
For your lungs.
Though it's interesting that with the research that I was doing, that still 75% of Canadians who are using pot are just smoking it like in a joint. Like
that's actually wild to me.
Yeah, that it's really? Way more common than vaping. It's way more common than edibles. Like that just like the you know.
But in
old
terms
school,
of.
And it's the least healthy, for sure. it's weird. That was a judgment. But to me, it was surprising.
It was really surprising to me, too.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm wondering, right? I mean, maybe the in vogue thing is doing it with a vape. Maybe the younger kids, you know, they see the smoking and they see, you know, the actual, like, cigarette / joint in someone's mouth. And they're like, ew, like, that's...
Right. And, you know, it is, you know, something that you see a lot more in high schools nowadays is that vaping has become the thing. So there does seem to be a kind of a generational divide there where, you know, I guess other people have formed their behaviors when, you know, rolling a joint was the main thing or smoking out of a bong was the main thing.
I'm just saying, like, lung cancer is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
I've heard of way too many people passing from lung cancer. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying don't smoke your joint occasionally. It's fine. I'm just saying, you know, it's a thing.
Right. And just to be wary of it, that whenever you're inhaling smoke, whether that's tobacco or cannabis, you're increasing the likelihood for cancer for sure.
What was the other part? Were you going to add something to that part socially? Did you want to get into the social stuff?
Yeah, sure. Because you mentioned like you mentioned some of the trends, and there's some interesting trends for sure.
I'm going to have a little fun with this. So I'm pulling out my phone right now.
Okay.
Because I wanted to do this like off the cuff.
Oh, okay.
Because I thought that – so it's really hard to get a gigantic sample size of people, right?
Yeah.
So I figured, what better place than Reddit?
Oh, jeez. Okay, yep.
You didn't see this coming, did you?
No, I did not see this coming. Oh, shit.
So I was having a little bit of fun the other day, and I was looking. So if you go to top posts of all time, I figured that those would be posts that the community would resonate with.
Right, that's why they're so popular.
Or like, just like people, yeah, that's why, exactly, that's why they're so popular. So I thought this one was really interesting. The third one has 15.5K likes. It's a pretty big group. And there's a gentleman smoking from a bong, and it says, the best way to wake and bake. It's interesting, right?
So yeah.
So you have this, like, messaging that's like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
This is, like, so good.
Yeah, because, again, it kind of falls into that, well, you know, marijuana is natural. It's not a chemical substance like cocaine or crystal meth, so therefore it's okay. It's like, no, just because something's natural doesn't mean it doesn't have health consequences. I mean, poisonous mushrooms are natural and...
And you can definitely have major health consequences if you're not careful.
Yeah.
There's a lot of so one thing I do see though is if you look through one of the trend lines also is just a general. I don't want to use too strong of a word, but it's almost a reverence, a fascination, a glorification of weed. You know, you see like, you know, giant pre-rolls, the weed factory, you know, this giant pail for this wake and bake, this massive, Jesus Christ, this thing's big. He's got a, there's a gentleman that has a, what is it? It was like a, oh, a 17 gram nug of
weed.
Oh
my God, that thing's huge.
So it's almost like, it's almost idealistic. Like an idol, like like something you
like a spiritual connection.
Like it, there's almost like this like idolization, like all hail the great 17 gram nug. Bow down to the nug.
And I mean, to be fair, throughout human history, people have used substances for spiritual purposes. Like it does seem to fill some kind of role there. When I see it on social media, of course, like the cynical part of me kind of goes like, well, okay, how much of this is actually spiritual versus how much of this is kind of like signaling to your tribe or looking for validation?
Well, that's the other thing is there's a huge tribal aspect to it. Do you mind if I just like read one of these? It's hilarious.
Yeah, go for it.
Title, I'm okay. And then they have, it's basically a picture of a screenshot of some text. One time I asked the owner of a club I was working if I could smoke weed in the green room. He looked at me, poured cocaine onto the table, snorted it, and walked away. To this day, it's the coolest way someone's ever said, yeah, sure, to me.
Oh, man.
That just like encompasses actually a lot.
Yeah.
The concept of like the level, the – so – there's an argument that obviously there's a – it doesn't get the respect that it deserves. And I think part of the reason that is obviously is because the weed is just stronger now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. When you're talking about – yeah, this is amazing. I love this. Just the, for the third time this week, I'm buying weed for the next 2 weeks.
Oh man, I so relate to that, to my substance use back in the day.
Really?
Like, oh yeah, this eight ball will totally last me through Pride.
No.
Later that day.
Oh. That's amazing. Later that day. Ding 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 ding. Yep. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. And he's like, yes, I got him.
Yep.
Buy more.
Yep.
Oh my God. Yeah, so, I mean, there. Wow, I just totally had a lisp there for a sec. Go ahead.
If it's okay to kind of back up some of these trends with stats.
Just having a little fun.
Some interesting changes. So since cannabis was legalized in Canada in 2018, Stats Canada has been collecting annual data just on kind of trends in cannabis use and everything. That's where I got the number that 75% of people are smoking it as opposed to using it other methods. And what they found was that prior to legalization, 14%, that's 14% of Canadians had used pot in the last 3 months.
Okay.
Since legalization, that number is up to 20%. So
it's a sizable jump.
Yeah, yeah. And this has been replicated in Portugal, where they decriminalized substances in the early 2000s, in U.S. states where they've decriminalized, in some states, legalized cannabis as well, that you do see jumps. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that everyone is running out and, you know, becoming a daily stoner as soon as it's legalized. No, but it does seem to be that when you legalize something or normalize something, that, yeah, there's those people on the fence who are maybe curious about it before, who are like, oh, now that it doesn't have legal repercussions, well, I'll give it a shot
because
now that I can get it through legal means. And
so there's a that's actually one thing I noted as well, is that as soon as you make something legal, there's a certain segment of the population that actually in D&D terms, we'll call them the lawfully good.
Yes.
They go, well, the laws have now
the
been shifted.
The law says fine.
So it's fine.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
And there's, it's interesting, right? Once again, you have this mismatch between the messaging that's out there. And but you know, maybe the difficult part about it is it's not doing harm as much as it's taking away positive experiences and progress for people.
Yeah.
Is that an accurate portrayal?
Largely, yes. I mean, we'll get into psychosis in a little bit. Largely, yes. Though I would still argue that that's a form of harm, though.
Of course. But yes. I'm just saying, like, the reason why it's so easy to minimalize is you could say, well, no one really ODs on weed.
Correct. Yep.
So, like, what's your problem? Like, I'm going to...
Right. It doesn't cause nearly the same health issues that alcohol does, for example.
Yeah.
And I think it's also possible to say, like, I kind of made this point before, that it's still in terms of the trade-offs, I'm in favor of decriminalizing all substances, mm-hmm. that you can still make the case that legalization is a net positive, even though there are these trade-offs with, mm-hmm. you know, more people trying it and...
So you actually believe all substances should be legalized?
I do.
Really?
I do.
All.
I don't know if this is like too much of a rabbit, or at least
I'm not
going to
go all the way down there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or at least.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. Okay. So we're not going to like.
Yeah.
You can't go to the government store and like.
Get
pick
your
up
meth.
Everything.
Well, I mean, for ADHD medication,
that might even be,
you kind of can get your
that
meth.
Might actually be helpful. I mean. It's tricky. It's a complicated thing. It's a big, huge, gigantic rabbit hole.
Right. Yes.
That I think we don't have time for one or two episodes or to fit in within a 5-minute conversation.
Totally. Because there's so much that would have to go along with the decriminalization.
Yeah, you can't just do it. Yeah, that's the...
Yeah. Yeah. You need to massively invest in addiction support.
Yeah. And I look at some of what happens here in Vancouver, where we have a massive drug issue, is I feel like there's little Band-Aids being thrown on it, but they're not addressing the actual problem.
Correct. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. They're not addressing the mental health issues or the poverty or, yes, exactly.
If we want to rise up as people sometime, let me know. We can do it. Just saying. I think I'm just going to say this out there because I'm on a podcast right now. It would require a massive Black Lives Matter scale of protest for the government to actually do anything about it. That's my belief.
I used to think that. I'm seeing more promising signs, though. I'm seeing the new premier in BC who is replacing Horgan, David Eby. Now, so far, it's words. I mean, he was only just became premier.
He's so optimistic.
It's just words so far.
But you know he's a politician, right?
Yes, I hear you. I hear you.
That's
yes.
the Polish in me.
But,
Eastern European Seb says.
No. And I'm not naive that way. But all I'm saying is that the discourse has started to shift and he is starting to talk more about, changes to the SROs and increasing mandated treatment and that kind of thing. I'm like, okay, all right. Like
people with real drug problems, not marijuana.
Oh, shit. Bad sin.
Wow. I'm sorry.
But anyway,
this is all an aside. It's a fun little aside. So, okay. So there's a mismatch.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes. And Gen Z is using pot at higher rates than previous generations, though their alcohol consumption has gone down compared to previous generations. So there does seem to be
a net positive, do you think?
Switching. I do.
See, that's what I think too.
I think it is a net positive.
I think it's a net positive. I didn't think we never actually talked about this before.
When a push comes to shove, that I would rather
someone be stoned than like
than rip roaring drunk and that.
Gonna
of course,
tighten
my preference.
My leather belt tonight before I abuse all the people around me.
No, Seth. <Seth. laughs>
Wow. Not going there. Wow. Should have given the disclaimer warning.
Yeah, the trigger warning this episode. I do see it as a net positive overall, though I do worry a little bit about it becoming overly normalized and that, 5-10 years in the road from now, we're going to be having, increased mental health problems because people
Lung cancer.
Right. That there's...
I mean, lung cancer is already insane. But.
Right. But we were making progress with decreasing tobacco rates. But now
I'm going to go back to my like conspiracy sub and say, well, you know, tobacco sales are down, Matthew. Okay. Those coffers got to fill up somehow. Okay. So let's just give them the weed and we'll make some more money.
Damn, you're cynical.
Me?
A little bit. Again, I think that's an Eastern European thing. If I grew up in a Soviet nation, I'd be a little paranoid as well.
You shut your mouth. You don't talk to me that way. Yes, I'm cynical. Of course I'm cynical. Okay. But, I mean, I don't know. Like, I am. Yeah, okay, I'm very cynical. Wow. I just feel like I've been outed, you know? It's like, hey, everyone. Hi.
It's okay. We see you.
We see you. Oh, you see me?
We see you and love you.
Oh, the cockles are where my heart used to be. Oh. I salute you.
Yeah. So if it's okay, let's
I'm having fun. Okay, yeah. Psychosis.
Yeah, segue back. Ooh, psychosis, just before psychosis, touching on just maybe a couple other interesting factoids that might be helpful for the listener.
Totally.
I think we alluded to this one before, but marijuana is the substance that is the second highest substance for people seeking treatment for, alcohol being number one, marijuana being number two.
Yeah, so it just depends on how you define it. Because, I mean, mine was, they said they were, it was the number one, but.
Right, they're not thinking of alcohol as a drug.
Alcohol is harmless.
No, it's definitely not.
Anyway, so yeah, so number one.
Is alcohol, and then number two, weed. Which, again, like is totally counter to, I think, a lot of people's perceptions of it. Now, part of that is a numbers game because weed is also the second most prevalently used substance after alcohol.
I see. Okay.
There's just, you know, that much of a denominator of people using it so that even if it's a small percentage who get dependent on it, of course there's going to be lots of them. So that is something to keep in mind.
Yeah. But, okay. That's very cool, though. I mean, I, that was the part, like, when you told me that you were seeing people, you know, in session. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I was shocked.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
And like I said, it's very common presenting issue in session is trying to pursue either like a harm reduction or an abstinence-based approach to their pot use.
Oof. Really? Just cold turkey?
Yeah.
And that sounds terrifying. Okay,
this is another interesting rabbit hole to go down. Which is
that sounds terrifying to me.
Yeah,
because we just said that like when you take weed consistently, then there's like a bounce back in anxiety, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of like when someone takes even like a SARMs, like a Paxil, kind of antidepressant. When you come off of it, there's going to be this like rebound. So that's why I said. It sounds terrifying because I correlate it to these kinds of situations.
Yeah, and I should have been more specific with what I meant by abstinence. Abstinence, in some cases, is the goal, but getting abstinence
that makes sense.
Is often like, yeah, for the next little while, can you cut back and then try doing it every second night? Or you know what I mean? Like, it's usually a kind of a tapering off process.
Okay. I was like,
with abstinence being like the eventual goal.
Okay. That makes sense. So harm reduction. Perhaps contemplating what that kind of like reality would look like.
Absolutely, yeah.
If it would be helpful, if it's doable, because I imagine for some people they might, you know, they might want to have their joint once in a while.
Yep.
And maybe finding a way to manage that.
Yeah, like what boundaries need to be in place for that to be a once in a while thing, and being honest with yourself. If you try the harm reduction route multiple times and you find that it just escalates back to what it was before, it's like, ooh, is abstinence just the better path? Because it's just like this constant roller coaster of it going up and down.
Now we're also going back to subculture, though.
Because
if all of my friends are stoners,
where
do I even start? Because if they pull out a joint and I all of a sudden say... And we see this with alcohol as well.
Sure.
You go to a restaurant. Someone offers you a drink. You're sitting there. You're like, you don't know what to say. It's awkward. It's hard.
Sure.
People, oftentimes drinkers and likely people who smoke pot will be sitting there going, oh, like, you're not like one of us anymore.
Yeah.
There's like a kind of an exile, a fear of exile. I mean, that's,
yes.
You know, back in the day, like when, you know, someone was punished One of the biggest punishments they could receive is to be exiled.
Yeah, to be banished from the tribe is hugely threatening because it's like, how do I survive either emotionally or, you know, physically as well if I'm banished from the tribe?
Yeah, so there's like a kind of a reinforcing social element that I think keeps people in their lane.
Yeah, yeah. And to be honest with you, I like how you put it, the fear of exile, because to be honest with you, most people's experience is that as they cut back on their use, that judgment that they think they're going to get from friends, mm-hmm. partner, et cetera, is less than they expected. That most people, when you kind of tell them, like most people, like even if they have no intention of stopping or cutting back themselves, mm-hmm. they'll be like, hey, man, like that's cool that, you know, you're trying to do that for you. Having said that, you will get, you know, some people who are very enably and
or resistant to that concept.
Yeah, you will get some of them, but most people tend to be more supportive than you think they're going to be.
I think that brings up an interesting, I have this opinion, and there, I believe there's studies that would prove that this is true, is that we tend to overestimate the effect of future events.
Yeah.
And because of that, it creates this extra fear. Yep. And so what we find is like when we actually deal, like we all have phobias or things we don't deal with. They're yep. like whether, you know, some of us is our taxes, some of us it's dealing with some weird thing they haven't dealt with in a long time. And this fear of we're going to pull up this Band-Aid and it's going to be this horrible situation. It's going to yep. be the worst thing in the world. And when we do it, it's kind of like,
oh, that wasn't so bad.
That was it?
Yeah, totally. The anticipatory fear is almost always worse than the actual experience.
And I think that's like a really good life lesson or something to take away even from this episode.
For sure, for anxiety in general, yeah.
Yeah, just, you know, we tend to overestimate the impact of those events. There was a study done. They said that, I don't have the exact information of where the study was from, but it was in a TED Talk, and they said that even if you became a paraplegic, within 2 to 3 years, you actually go back to baseline happiness levels.
Yes, yes.
Pretty predictably.
Yes. We assume that, like, oh my God, if I became physically disabled, how would I ever cope with that? It's like, you'll be amazed that
most people won the lottery.
Yeah. Most people are resilient and will go back to some kind of baseline functioning.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So do you want to transition now to psychosis?
Sure. Yeah. Sorry. Let me just. Oh, yeah. If there's any other point on that stuff, I do want to touch, because I do want to give credit to the social fears, because that is a big thing. Like mm-hmm. if you get your source of community that way, and it doesn't have to be this all or nothing thing. But usually what I encourage people to do is kind of like diversifying their friendship portfolio. It's not like you're having this hard line like, no, I got to cut these people totally out of my life and never talk to them again. They're bad influences. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it doesn't have to be that way. It's more making sure that you're fostering other friendships where weed isn't the central thing, mm-hmm. just so that you have alternatives. And like, and yeah, like you can hang out with that kind of, you know, that quote unquote like stoner group of friends every now and then, mm-hmm. but you know you've got friends that you do other shit with, and that's not going to be a temptation.
Are you telling me that my Magic the Gathering thing is a problem?
No, I would never say that because I've got that addiction too. We can both be in denial together.
So if we stop playing, like that'd be it.
Yeah. You're excommunicated. I'm
feeling very seen right now.
Yeah.
Do you have a Magic the Gathering addiction problem?
It's not a problem if I don't admit it.
Wow. There's only like, what percentage of the audience actually got that joke?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we are so sorry.
Yeah, we're so sorry. Like, what the fuck are they
like,
talking
we're
about?
We're seeing things.
Yeah. Which brings us to good segue to psychosis.
Which is, okay, so super interesting thing. When I read it, when I hear psychosis, I did not have any idea or concept of what it actually was.
Right, okay. What did you think it was versus what it is?
Like a delirious paranoia state. Because psychosis sounds psycho.
Yeah.
There's psycho. So I thought of this like delirious. I didn't know there's actual schizophrenic aspects to it.
Yeah. The psychosis is a symptom of schizophrenia.
Yeah. And I had no idea about at all, which is hilarious because I thought I would have an understanding about this. But psychosis was just this – my understanding was when you overdo it with some kind of substance, you can have psychosis and it's bad. Mm-hmm. And I bet actually that most people that would be their – because, I mean, I'm actually into like psychology, but mm-hmm. I had no idea psychology.
See, there's another psych word. Whoa. but yeah, that you're right that it's not something that most people are familiar with.
Okay, so how about we start off with just defining? I mean, because saying it's a symptom is one thing.
Yeah.
But what exactly is psychosis?
It's experiencing some sort of sensory hallucination. It can be induced through substances. Mm-hmm. It can be induced through a mental health issue like schizophrenia.
Yeah.
But it's like this feeling of some sort of sensory hallucination that is out of your control.
Okay.
And now when people are taking certain substances like acid, for example, you wouldn't really say
what's the difference, right?
Like because that's you're purposely going on a trip. You're taking it for the purpose of having those sensory hallucinations.
Totally. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Whereas psychosis is something that can happen after you come down off of acid. Some mm-hmm. people will have what's called residual psychosis, and they'll get stuff like flashbacks, which will kind of happen at like random moments mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And a similar kind of thing can happen with weed as well, that you're not just experiencing some hallucination or paranoia when you're under the influence of pot, mm-hmm. but that you'll have this residual effect even after you've stopped using it.
Residual psychosis effects?
Yes.
Really?
And or paranoia. Yes. Yeah.
Is that a common thing?
Fortunately, no. Though there are things that make it more common. For example, age. If you start smoking weed in your early adolescent years, for example, it does increase your risk factors for developing psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a family history of schizophrenia, that's another one.
Well, there's the gene mutation. That was the one that actually – there's a gene mutation that actually leads to more psychosis with weed use, which I thought was really crazy.
Yeah.
They actually said there's a 5 times higher risk with higher potency.
Yes.
So high THC content, which is – there was also – the age thing. They were saying there's a huge difference when you're exposed really young.
Yep.
I think it's like five or six fold difference.
Yep, in terms of your likelihood for psychosis,
which I thought was, and one of the other things I read, I wanted to just add this little tidbit because I thought it was very fascinating. Mm. They said schizophrenics might be biologically more vulnerable to the rewarding effects of drugs of abuse.
Yeah, because
do you find that that's accurate, like in your day to day?
Absolutely. So, what's common with schizophrenia is dysregulated serotonin, which also has impact on your moods as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because of that, because your serotonin is dysregulated, you are looking for substances to regulate that, and so you are kind of a bit more drawn to.
Okay, so that makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
so you have depression has uppers, anxiety has downers.
Psychosis has like pretty much anything to kind of self-regulate.
Really?
Yeah. So I've met schizophrenics where it is weed that they gravitate to. Others it's opiates. Others it's stimulant.
Wow.
Like it's, yeah, but it
what
is
a
looking.
Trip.
Yeah, it is
literally
looking for something external. And you know, it's important to know from an outsider's perspective because you might, you know someone with schizophrenia and go like, oh, my God, you've got schizophrenia. Like, why on earth would you ever reach out for a substance? That's going to make it so much worse. But mm-hmm. from their perspective, they're suffering, and the substance use, at least in the short term, alleviates some of that suffering.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It makes them feel more in control of their mood regulation.
So weed being tied to psychosis
mm-hmm. –
Does that mean weed is tied to schizophrenia, or is that a totally?
That one's a bit more controversial. When people talk about schizophrenia, they are talking more about that genetically inherited condition that psychosis is one of the symptoms, not the only symptom. There's other things like catatonia and paranoia, for example, that can be associated with it. Whereas psychosis is like very specifically those auditory or visual hallucinations that that people get, that both schizophrenics get and sometimes people who smoke weed get.
Okay, so we've kind of uncovered, like, we've taken off the this quote-unquote, like, band-aid of common jargon that people probably didn't break down and disseminate before.
Yep.
So this is going to sound like a horribly simplistic question, but why is psychosis so bad? All I know is it's bad. So how do people, like, what it makes, it sounds terrifying, because the word in itself has this, like,
stigma to it. And
psycho is literally in the word. So, I mean, what is scary about psychosis?
It's that feeling of being out of control and also not being believed, too.
Oh.
So you will hear and see things as though they are 100% reality. And then everyone around you is going like, there's no man there. What are you talking about? Like, it's like you're constantly being gaslighted.
Oh, this is.
That's the feeling of it. That is kind of like, what do you mean you're not hearing that sound?
I'm having
there
a real,
is a loud sound there.
I'm having a huge light bulb moment right now. Because that's so okay. So, because I don't think, because psychosis is not really defined very often, at least in my, from my experience. Because if I don't know it, then this has to be somebody else who doesn't know it.
For sure.
I see all these, you know, Vancouver, we have a huge homelessness issue. We have a big drug issue. And I see all of these people, you know, maybe walking around the city talking to imaginary people. And I think, wow, what a shame. Like, they shut down that mental hospital. But you're also, it's kind of, in a way, like what you're indicating is that this could be literally just be someone coming off of drugs.
Could be. Yep.
So we don't really know.
Yeah. And that's why psychiatrists will typically wait about 3 months or so after the person stops using substances before diagnosing whether there's schizophrenia there or not. Because, yeah, even up to 3 months after stopping, say, crystal meth, people can still have occasional psychosis. But it's the kind of thing that's going to continue to taper off and eventually disappear.
Okay.
But after that time period, it's more likely that you're now looking at, like, the lifelong condition of schizophrenia.
Oh, like, so they kind of have to, like, separate the streams?
Yeah, exactly. Because it's...
So there's no real way, like, if we see someone on the street who's...
It's, yeah.
Talking at air or motioning.
You don't know if they're under the influence of substances. You don't know if they're schizophrenic or both, that they're both schizophrenic and using substances.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really tricky.
Yeah. Yeah. It is for sure. So, and it's terrifying for the person because, like I said, it's like you're being gaslighted constantly.
Do you think that people are unaware of that link? Because I don't think even I brought it up when we talked about it originally, like this topic.
I think because, again, of all the fear-mongering that happened in the 80s and 90s around substance use, that people have kind of tuned it out. Like, oh, yeah, I'm going to smoke weed and all of a sudden become psychotic. And, of course, that's not the majority experience. This is a minority of people we're talking about.
Yep.
But it is important to know you're rolling the dice. But there is an element of rolling the dice there.
Wow. Interesting. I feel – okay, so once again, disclaimer – we're not saying don't smoke your weed. We're just trying to provide a little bit of information and context and perspective. Because I think having, you know, you here is really helpful to enlighten, I guess, people about some of the risk factors, some of the things that go on, like, you know, when you've had over in session.
Yeah.
What else might you add? Like, if you were to, you know, speak to somebody, I mean, is there anything else you would add that we haven't really discussed yet in this discussion?
We've talked about risk factors in terms of age and in terms of, like, if you have a family history of schizophrenia or substance use issues. Because that's something else that I think gets missed a little bit, that somebody will have, say, like, okay, my father was an alcoholic, so I'm going to stay away from alcohol, but I'm going to smoke weed. And it's like, okay, from, you know, to an extent, like that is a harm reduction strategy. Like I see where people are going with that. But there is still a chance, because you have that family history of people using an external substance to cope, that you are going to transfer that over to pot. And just to be aware of that, like that family history, even if it's with a different substance, there's still some risk there.
Yeah. One thing we didn't actually touch on, I wanted to mention, which you probably have more experience with than I do, is the way it interacts with different drugs as well.
Yeah. So
again, I've had personal experiences with this, because I saw someone that was drunk and high.
Yeah.
And that combo... okay?
Yeah, it's intense.
Like, I'm in 3D over here, and you're like on planet Mars.
Right, in like the 10th dimension. Yeah.
You're just not here. You're just, it's like I'm staring at a husk of a human.
Yeah.
That sounds horrible. I'm not trying to be judgmental, but like, the context, it was someone I was dating for a long time. I'd come back from work, and I was very judgy, of course, because the last thing you want to come home from work to is someone who's completely gone. Like, you're waiting for this. Like, I had a really stressful job. I was working at the nightclub. I come home, and she's just gone.
It's just fucked up, and you're just kind of like, oh, okay, now I'm babysitting you.
Cool. This is emotional support here. Thanks, babe. Thanks so much.
So in terms of the interactions with other substances, again, this is somewhere where there's been some fear-mongering in the past, where it's like, oh, you know, the whole marijuana is a gateway drug. You smoke weed today, it's going to be heroin tomorrow kind of thing. It's like, well, it's not a gateway drug in that sense. However, again, going back to these annual surveys, it is true that people who smoke pot are also more likely to
engage with other substances.
Yeah. So I don't like the metaphor of it being a gateway drug, but there is some correlation.
There's a correlation, but there's not causation.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there was actually, it's on the top of that Reddit group. They're saying Biden said it was a gateway drug.
Oh, jeez.
And, of course, they had a heyday with that.
Right. Like, so, oh, jeez. Oh,
yeah, because correlation doesn't mean causation, right?
Right, that there's probably some other variable. And it can come down to personality, that people who are more open to experience and also people who are kind of more impulsive in general are likely both to experiment with weed and experiment with other substances. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that is more the variable that's
that was kind of my thought process too, right? I find, when it comes to even any kind of recreational drug, there's also greater, there's a correlation there to like steroid use, there's a correlation to, because there's just like this openness to experience. I'm open to whatever happens, and
I just want to try new things.
And it's like super cool and fun, and there's some of us, you know, maybe like me, you know, we sit and we want to like understand everything and get it, and then we jump into the pool, but we don't do it right away.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with that in terms of personality differences. And then also in terms of drug interactions, just to be cautious that whenever you're mixing substances, you are causing extra stress on the body. Mm-hmm. And what I was doing in my kind of active using days of using stimulants and then using some kind of downer,
I've seen before, yeah.
Yeah, that it makes a certain sense on at face value. It's like, oh, okay, now I want to go to sleep. Now I'm going to put on the brakes after stepping on the gas. But if you drive your car, you know that stepping on the gas and the brake at the same time actually isn't healthy for your car.
That makes sense.
that you think that you're kind of balancing things out, but you're actually just adding extra stress to the body by putting an upper and a downer at the same time.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, especially on the organs, I imagine there'd be some pretty negative consequences, because you're actually asking unnatural amounts of push and pull.
Yeah, at the same time. And you're asking your liver and kidney to process kind of multiple different substances at once.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it. I went to a birthday party once. And I had some friends who were into all that stuff, and it was like wild. I may have been on a mind-altering substance. Mm. My friend may have come up to me and spoke very quickly. And he looked at me and he's like, I'm talking really fast, aren't I? I'm like, you're like, yeah. Yes. I'm pretty good. And he's like, okay. And he walked away. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, and it was he was riding the highs and the lows. Yeah, it was wild. It was, I mean, I don't know if I would go back there again. Maybe, I mean, I'm like one of those people, like, I'm very, very casual. I don't put myself in situations where I abuse things that are hard. Like, this is the thing. Like, it's the same with eating, right? If you know, if you have accessibility to it, you kind of set yourself up to fail.
Yeah.
So I set myself up in a position where just certain substances, I literally have to be in this once in a blue moon situation, and it has to show up in front of me, and it happens. But I'll never go seek it. I'll never put a number in my phone. I'll never find a dealer. Like, I just, I try to set myself up so the atmosphere, the environment, doesn't really allow me to fall into those pitfalls.
Yeah. And thank you for mentioning that in terms of environmental cues, because that's usually one of the angles that I go in counseling if somebody is wanting to reduce or eliminate their pot use, is changing up some of those rituals, because it's become such a habituated pattern that it requires kind of like rewriting the script.
Yeah.
It requires like, okay, I hear that you don't want to totally throw out your bong, but can you put it somewhere where it's not visible?
Less
it's a little
accessible.
Bit less, yeah, less accessible. Can you have a friend take care of it for you, you know, while you're, you know, taking a break from pot? Can you take an alternative route home from work if your ritual is after work to go to the, you know, the local store and buy weed? Can you kind of like, you know, go a block around it or something?
That actually applies to like almost any habit forming.
Absolutely. You've kind of got to reprogram.
You want to learn how to play guitar, you put guitar like
right
in front of you, so you can literally pick it up and it's right there, and every day it screams to you like, pick me up and play me. And then if you want to, like, you know, for instance, like food, you know, I don't actually keep certain foods in my house.
Ice cream cannot be in my freezer. It just can't. Well, I mean, it can't, because it'll just be gone in a couple minutes.
Little Seb.
And, like, it'll
little Seb. Yeah. Like, I will. I'm not the kind of person who has any restraint with that kind of thing. So I just keep myself really far away. I guess some people would call me self-aware.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, just being aware of your relationship with the substance or behavior, and just being honest with yourself. Like, you know, it's so easy in the here and now to be like, oh, no, tonight I'm just totally not going to go home and smoke up.
Mm-hmm.
But if your ritual is to go home
and, do
and
that.
The bong is right there.
I mean, you're setting yourself up to lose
Totally.
Right?
Like, like you said, set yourself up for success in terms of those contextual clues.
Yeah, so then you're almost playing around with the context or playing around with ideas of where you're trying to switch out that habit for another one.
Absolutely. And that's another important point.
You got to brainstorm, though. This actually requires active work on your end in terms of looking for other ideas and concepts and ways of being.
Yeah.
Which, once again, I kind of like that we're closing in on the end here. I like that we're actually closing out with things that are really relevant, even if you smoke weed and don't have a problem, you know, everybody wants to be a little better. Everyone has things they can improve.
For sure.
Being aware of like the habits that are both helpful and detrimental for us, I think, is a really good place to begin, at least to like become more aware of those things, be conscious of our decisions. I don't know if I ever told you, like, when people are having a hard time with their food habits, I call it like zombie mode.
Mm.
Where they don't contemplate, they don't actually think, they're kind of unconsciously doing things. Yeah. And I think with the weed example, actually, it's very similar.
So similar, yeah, absolutely.
You come back from work, you're tired, the bong's there, boom, it's like
done.
It's just an automated thing. It's so wired in our brains.
Yep.
So, but also I want to speak to the fact that that is really challenging.
Oh, it is. It's definitely, in the short to medium term, changing those patterns is really tough. And I try to give people the hope that it will become the new normal, these new habits.
Mm-hmm.
At first, it's going to feel really difficult and counterintuitive and like almost like you're fighting against yourself because you're so used to the patterns and you're craving. But over time, like I'm coming up, depending on when this podcast goes up on the air, I'm coming up on 10 years sober.
Whoa, congratulations. Which,
thank you. It's wild.
10 years?
10 years, I know.
That's a decade.
Yeah, the big 10.
What is that? That's 3,600 days?
Yeah, yeah, over 3,600 days of not using alcohol or other drugs.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's pretty awesome.
It was really tough at first, but now it's something that doesn't even occur to me. It's like a long time ago, it became the new normal that I don't drink or use other drugs. You know what I mean? Like it's just, it becomes like brushing your teeth. Like you don't think about it. You just kind of do it. And
so, yeah, that's interesting because I think that we there's certain realities that aren't even within our consciousness yet.
Yeah.
When we make certain, change certain pathways or certain choices that we make, and those choices tend to multiply and expand, and they can turn into something that we don't even expect.
Yeah.
Like me being a vegan, it is not like, if you asked me 10 years ago, I would like laugh in your face.
Right. Yeah.
Like what? Like, why would I do that?
Yeah.
I need my protein, Matthew.
Yeah. And because, and that goes into like the identity piece of like, you start to identify. Back then you were identifying with eating meat. Now being a vegan has become part of your identity. For me, being sober has become a part of my identity, whereas like I used to be like party gay twink.
Yeah.
That used to be my identity. You know,
it's like so that's why you're having flashbacks earlier on.
Yes, with the trance music. Yes. Get my glow sticks, like gnawing my teeth. You know,
that's hot. Yeah. Yeah. Gnaw your teeth, Matthew. Yes. Yeah.
Grind those teeth.
He's doing really good right now. Wow, I was going to say something really obnoxious. I was going to go right to like something kinky. I was like, yeah. Here's your ball gag. Here's your mouth guard. You chew on this.
Yeah. Hey, okay. Back in the day when I was dropping E, like that probably would have been helpful, actually.
Okay, so I have a fun. Okay, so thank you for everyone if you made it to the end. If we upset you and you left early, well, you're not here anymore, so I'm not going to talk to you anymore. however, we wanted to end off with a segment that I'm literally just dropping on Matthew for fun. Today, we're going to title it Bad Relationship Advice.
Bad Relationship Advice.
Yeah, because I think it's fun.
Okay.
It's topical for me right now, so.
Okay.
Matthew, I need you to dig deep.
And find my worst relationship advice ever. Okay.
Yeah.
You need to stay with this person no matter what, because this is going to be the best that you'll ever get. And you'll be alone forever if you don't stay with
You'll also
this
be
person.
A failure in your whole
yes,
community.
Yes, you don't want to be a failure at relationships. And if it doesn't work out with this person, there's no chance of it working out with anyone else.
Well, the important thing to note is that you have to protect your ego at all costs.
Mm.
And because you're so intertwined with your family, when you take on that embarrassment, it actually is a reflection of your own personal self-worth and value.
Mm-hmm. And it's a shame to your family as well.
Yeah, you are a failure. Wow.
Wow. It's like, fuck, I can't end on that note.
What do you get when you mix an elephant and a rhino?
What do you get?
Elephino! We're so sorry. Okay.
Well, thanks everyone for tuning in with us. We hope that you found this discussion helpful. Just looking at some of the pros and cons and maybe some info that you hadn't heard before. And yeah, just having an honest reflection on your own relationship with weed. And if you think that it's something that needs to change, like kind of asking yourself, like, what am I missing out on potentially because of my relationship with weed? You know, is it taking anything away from me?
Yeah, I think that's a really great way to send everyone off. Mm. Awesome. Thank you. I'm Sebastian signing out. Thank you for listening to Men's Junk Podcast. Our sponsor is... And then you can cut out. Oh, no, we're not doing that. I'm going to get him to edit, put it in. Yeah. And now you can say, you just say, I'm Matthew, I'm sorry.
Oh, and sorry. Take care, everyone. My name's Matthew. Thanks for tuning in and look forward to talking to you next time.
Have a great night.